This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the homely voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Homely indeed.
Yes, what surroundings we are in.
We are. You've finally been invited.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Nearly 2 years, more than 2 years of doing the podcast. And I'm here. I'm finally here. It's what I've been striving for since we started. I'm in the Lee family home where dreams were started.
True, there was a full-size goal in the garden not so long ago where I learned my trade. Very true. And you've been invited. I mean, let's not discuss the fact that part of the deal of you picking me up from the airport and me bringing me back here was that you were going to step foot inside the house. Look, that's irrelevant. I would have invited you in anyway.
Purely necessity. It's just logistics.
Just logistics. It's just we had to record this podcast somewhere and this just fit. But no, absolutely. If you want to take it that you've been invited, then please do and enjoy it.
It's a lovely place.
It's a nice home. It's a nice home. So I did. I moved here at 7 years old. This was certainly as I was younger, coming through the various age groups at Begrove Dynamos. Of course, I'm sure everyone's heard of Begrove Dynamos, of course, famous Sunday League club in Aylesbury. And then from there, at the age of 10, joining Watford, leaving this family home at 16 years old to go and join Watford. But I was here for several years. And of course, they're still here now.
Yes. It's lovely.
Many years later.
Delighted to be here. Just noticed some of the young Richard Lee photos that are filtered around the place.
Well, my dad does have, and my brothers, my younger brothers, do give him a bit of stick for it because it is a little bit of a shrine in the office. There's a lot of old pictures and shirts and, not really much of my brothers. I mean, look, it is what it is. I mean, I'm sure they'll get over it, but yeah, my dad's office is pretty much a shrine to me.
Okay, well, I have come to pick you up, of course, because you're going somewhere else shortly. Busy day for Richard Lee. We are at the end of the season now. The season is over. How do you feel? Season's over.
It's always a strange feeling. It is always a strange feeling because it's now that thought that actually for the next couple of months, there won't be the games. And I think I've mentioned on this several times that on a match day, if I'm not at a stadium, I then have a way in which I can stream a lot of games at once. It's something I really look forward to because, having that much going on and seeing that many goalkeepers in action, sat there with my pad and pen, I feel like an absolute geek, but I love it. I really, really love it. So I'm not too sure what I'm going to be doing my Saturday afternoons for the next couple of months, but it is what it is. Saying that, there's so many games over the summer anyway. I kind of feel now that we're pretty much in June and obviously we're still doing a podcast about what's happened at the weekend. I know we'll stop doing this podcast now for a little while, but of course there's going to be so many games over the summer. There's so much movement involving goalkeepers. And also, of course, the season starts earlier next season, so we're not even going to have to wait that long.
No, we're not.
No.
No, you will not have to wait too long, listeners. Lucky you.
Lucky you. Lucky thousands you. Of you. Millions of you.
Well, we've got a short show. We're going to be speaking about the Champions League. Of course, we are going to be crowbarring the French playoffs into this particular podcast. Of course, the English Football League playoffs as well, the Championship and League Two were both decided at the weekend. Just trying to think, Europa Conference League, of course, that happened in the week. So we'll be touching on that and a bit of GK's on their way too.
Indeed, we were short on content. So we involved the French League. Let's do it.
Okay, starting where we must start, the Champions League final and Thibaut Courtois, 9 saves, which is, Richard, I don't know whether you know this, statistically the most in a Champions League final, brackets, since 2003-04, of course, when Opta first began collecting data. 59 saves throughout the entire Champions League campaign for Real Madrid and a save percentage of 80.56%. They are all number one records for the man who believes he should be regarded as one of the number one goalkeepers in the world. Because he did say after the game, didn't he? Some respect needs to be put on my name. We've spoken about him a few times in the podcast, perhaps not as much as we should do. So this podcast in particular is really dedicated to Thibaut Courtois, the match winner, the trophy winner for Real Madrid.
And he was excellent. It's fair to say. I mean, he was, look, we're going to talk about some of his saves, but what I would say is there's a lot made of Real Madrid and, you know, some miraculous comebacks, etc. The way that they've actually won this Champions League. You look at every single round after the group stages, look at every single round, they didn't really deserve to win any of those games. They were outplayed in every single game. From memory, I think it was when Chelsea won, and they had a couple of games in particular where they were huge underdogs and managed to find a way to win. It reminded me of that a little bit. And actually, a big part of that has been him. And you could sense in this final that he knew it was about him. You know, it's one of the bits of advice I give a lot of young goalkeepers, certainly goalkeepers that maybe get a little bit nervous and not too sure, you know, what to expect the game ahead, not knowing which way it might go. I'd certainly advise to watch Thibaut Courtois, because I think the way in which he plays, where, and I'm going to use the word arrogance, but I mean it in such a positive way, like he is brimming with arrogance, with confidence, with arrogance. He knows and believes how good he is, and he wanted to be the star of the show. And you could sense as the game's going on, and you get that thing that happens that as the game goes on and you make more and more saves, suddenly things that you do that maybe are quite routine become that much more in the eye of the viewer, of the commentator. And we certainly, you know, saw that in the, as the game went on, he's catching crosses towards the end. And in fairness, good crosses he was catching. But then even some of the more simple things, you then start to get that gushing love that they were giving him. But he deserved it. You know, I thought the save to his right-hand side was extraordinary. And you know when things are going your way, when he's palmed it onto the post and he somehow managed to take the pace off the ball, full stretch to his right. Again, big man, so agile, so quick, not a lot can make the save, but he's even managed to take the pace off the ball. I'm sure he didn't know that he was doing that at the time, but that then meant that the rebound didn't go to a Liverpool player. The save full stretch to his right from Mo Salah was very good, made it look very, very comfortable, I thought. Sharp one down low to his left. A couple more routine saves as well, and I thought the one-on-one for me was the pick of the bunch. Just the fact that he's made himself so, so big. There's nothing more that Salah can do. That should end up in the corner, and the fact that it goes round the post in the way that he did. And I mentioned those crosses towards the end. I love that, because I think that we talk all day about saves, but for me, that's huge. When a goalkeeper comes 7-8 yards, takes a cross like that, when you're under pressure, you know as a goalkeeper how good it feels. You know how good your defenders feel. And it's one of the most heartbreaking things for the opposition when they're putting the pressure on you and they're waiting for that breakthrough, and a goalkeeper comes that far to claim a cross with such confidence, such ease. And look, he was very much in the zone. You know, I use that phrase. I don't use it that often. I use it sparingly, but he was in the zone. You just felt, don't want to use a cliche, but, you know, no one was going to beat him. He was in that sort of place. So a massive well done to him. And yeah, he's made the comments that he's made after the game. And look, I think he's right. I think that his record is phenomenal. And no doubt it will continue to get better and better.
Why do you think it was that he doesn't feel he's had the respect? Because when he went back to Chelsea this season, he was booed, bit of abuse. When he first went back to Atletico with Madrid, he was booed, bit of abuse. He didn't get on too well, did he, when he started at Madrid, if you remember. He was called the, he had a nickname, didn't he? What was it? The Invisible Keeper. That's right. What it was. Okay. Because his start to life there wasn't great. Didn't have a great relationship with Sergio Ramos, because Ramos was good friends with Keylor Navas. It just didn't really work out for him. But now he's right up there.
He is. Yeah, he is. Do you know what? And it's tough. Do you know what I'd say? And again, people might disagree with this, but I just don't think he's the most likable. I think it's as simple as that. I don't think where you've got certain goalkeepers, try and give some good examples now, and I don't know how they do it, but like even like an Edison, I think you just like Edison. You know, I'd probably go as far as to say that, but I think then a lot of that is a real positive again, because I go back to the word arrogant, and actually, you know, I'm looking at goalkeepers and goalkeepers that then make it to the very top, and we talk a lot about confidence and belief in yourself, but, you know, we talk about Peter Schmeichel probably way too often on this pod, but the reason we do, I think, and certainly the reason I do, is that my childhood memories and my idea of a goalkeeper for a long time was a Peter Schmeichel type figure, which was that brash at times, loud, arrogant, confident, just had that utter belief in themselves. And that's what ultimately you need to have to be a top goalkeeper, because I think if there's any chink in the armor, if there's a little bit of nervousness or you show that you're vulnerable in any way, then the opposition will exploit that and your team will sense that. So I think that what he's got, probably his biggest strength, is also what might put certain people off. And it's not something that you can consciously put your finger on, if that makes sense. That's the only thing I can really explain. I mean, there's been one or two things that have happened, I know, and people might point to them, but I just think it is. You just get a general feeling about... Do you know what? If I was going to use an example in tennis, it might be Djokovic.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
It's like everyone loves Roger Federer. Everyone loves Rafa Nadal. Like, why? And yet Djokovic has got this kind of... But again, there's a certain demeanor, that real ruthless demeanor that they've got, which is actually the reason they are where they are.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Took the words right out of my mouth.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like-minded, aren't we, Matthew? Oh, dear, we spent too much time together, I think.
Tell you what, we'll go back to the Europa Conference League because that occurred a few days after we'd done the pod last week. Roma against Feyenoord and Rui Patricio winning a trophy.
Very good. Very, very good. Certainly a couple of saves of note. The 1-2 is left. It felt like it quite got the love that it deserved. You know, full stretch to his left, fingertips up onto the bar and away. Really, really good save. Powerful, explosive dive to his left. And again, I know I say this far too often, but it is a save that not many goalkeepers make. And to make it in a game of that magnitude, to keep a clean sheet, to win the game in the way they did, another trophy for Mourinho, of course. Huge. And for him to, I guess, leave Wolves, we spoke a lot about Jose Sarr on our show and how well he's done, to go there and to win a trophy, I guess from his point of view, justifies his move.
Justin Bailoe was in for that game as well, the Feyenoord goalkeeper. Interestingly, hadn't played since March 10. Mm. Thought his season was over. They had in Ofir Marciano. Remember him? He was at Hibs, wasn't he, last season? He played in the big games against Partizan Belgrade, Slavia Prague and Marseille. Three goalkeepers on the bench as well for Feyenoord. That's rare.
Unusual. I don't really understand it, unless they were short in terms of squad or unless they just had a really nervous manager. Just you never know what might happen. I mean, look, we spoke a lot about the Watford situation many years ago where Almunia went down, Bond went down, and of course Jack Bonham ended up playing in that game against Leeds many, many years ago. So there you go, had Watford have had three goalkeepers on the bench, maybe it wouldn't have been quite a surprise, you see. And actually, they still would have had another goalie on the bench even when Jack Bonham was playing. So look, maybe they watched that game.
To finish on that particular game, there was a lot of love for goalkeeping, which I felt has been a theme over the past 7 days. A lot of love for goalkeeping, which is great. We love to jump on this because sometimes it was for saves that weren't even that spectacular, which is what they normally give them love for, just routine goalkeeping.
Yeah, which is also part of the problem. I guess that's where, I mean, that's why we do this.
Can't win with this, can
you? No, because that's why we do this pod, is that, I'll be honest, it annoys me just as much when, we're never going to correct them when they're giving goalkeepers love for an average save. But that's also part of the problem when they go overboard for an average save. Because, again, there's no consistency. I feel like we're talking about referees here, but it's the same thing. There's no consistency. Like, absolutely give praise for great pieces of goalkeeping, whether that is a save or catching a cross or a great bit of distribution or reading of the game or whatever it might be. But yeah, at the same time, when there was a couple of times in this game in particular, and I'm trying to think, was it McManaman maybe as a commentator? I can't think who the commentator was, but was really going overboard on saves that were reasonably routine. But as you say, I guess when that does happen, we can't necessarily complain too much. We'd rather it be that than the other.
Absolutely, we would. And there was more love for Aidan Stone, the League Two playoff final between Mansfield and Port Vale. Port Vale going up 3-0, a convincing win. And in the Championship as well, we saw Nottingham Forest promoted back to the Premier League for the first time since...
Go on.
It was 1999, wasn't it? They got relegated.
Was it 99? Was it? Yeah, was that the...
It was.
Yeah.
Who was the goalkeeper that day?
Go on. The goalkeeper that day. I'm thinking Ron Atkinson sitting in the wrong dugout. That was that year,
is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What were you going to say?
I thought you were going to say, was that the 8-1 Manchester United winning at Nottingham Forest?
Solskjaer scoring four goals
when
he came on as substitute. I'm guessing, was it Mark Crossley?
Nope.
This is going to annoy me because I think I know who it was and I can't think of his name.
A wily old campaigner. He's been on the podcast before. Yeah, very early on.
Really? Go on then, hit me.
I think I've got this right.
Yeah, let's hope. Otherwise, you're just giving eight goals to someone.
Mr. David Besant.
Ah, of course. I think you're right. Lovely little bit of trivia. Fun fact.
Bringing it back to goalkeeping, trying to win it back round.
Yeah, that's what you've done. Very nice. No, it was Very pleasing for Forrest. Felt for Lee Nichols. Again, we spoke about him plenty on the pod this year, and rightly so. He's been brilliant. Nothing more he could have done really in the playoff final. Just couldn't find a breakthrough. Huddersfield never really looked like finding a breakthrough, it's fair to say. You did wonder at the end, and give credit to Ethan Horvath. Not that he had a lot to do, but you could imagine, just put yourself in his shoes for a moment, last minute of a playoff game, and I know it's the £100 million game, whatever it is, when you've sat there on the bench for 89 minutes, you haven't played a game in a month or so since Samba came back in the team, and suddenly you've got to come on for a minute, and then there was 6 minutes of injury time. Yeah, credit to him. Again, didn't have loads to do, but he had a few goal kicks to take and certainly looked positive and did enough to get them over the line. And a massive one to Samba. I mean, you know, talk about how a career can go into overdrive, you know, over the last week or two. And certainly he was already a fan's favourite, but he really has endeared himself to the Nottingham Forest faithful. And seeing the celebrations after the game, huge, huge moment for them. And in terms of the League Two playoff final, Aidan Stone, who would have said that at the start of the season when Kovalan was very much the first choice, even then when Kovalan was taken out of the team, when he got that red card back in January, I want to say it was, they brought in Thomas Holy to then be the number one. So they weren't ever really giving Aidan Stone that number one gig, giving him that consistent run of games, but he's ended up finishing the season, some strong performances. Yeah, one or two moments in the final, but you'd expect that, I think, from a young goalkeeper playing in an arena like that. But he made a very good save to his left-hand side at 2-0, I think it was, which is an important save. Look, and in the end, he's kept a clean sheet at Wembley and they made it to League One.
Lucas Kovalan out in the wilderness, like you said, since January. In terms of squad selection, back in as a substitute goalkeeper for this game, and very much front and centre, no wilderness here with the celebrations. He was everywhere.
He was enjoying it, wasn't he just? No, and it's look, nice to see. It'll be really interesting to see what they do next season, because the moment that he got sent off, that's him done for the season. He hasn't played since, has he? Which, you know, you don't often see that a moment like that can really cost you in the way that it has. So as happy as he was, and look, he played a major part in the early part of the season, it will be really interesting to see what Port Vale do next season. Do they give him another chance? Do they give Aidan Stone a chance to really claim that number one spot in League One, or do they bring someone in? I guess we will find out in the coming weeks, and we will keep you informed via GK's On Their Way.
Oh yes, and that is coming up soon. Yes. Very quickly, from an educational stance here, so for you to give a bit of advice, the second goal, I believe it was, scored by Port Vale from James Wilson, the header that he nodded in from a rebound that came off the bar. Nathan Bishop, by the way, excellent season for him as well. We should flag that up. Really good season at Mansfield on loan from Manchester United. As that ball hit the bar, Bishop just hesitated. And it was almost like someone had pressed pause on the TV because he was dead still. James Wilson, however, read, I think, used that striker's instinct to think this is going to hit the bar, and then reacted quick enough in order to head it into the net. Had Nathan Bishop perhaps not hesitated, there might have been a chance he could have saved it. No fault attached to him whatsoever here, but as some advice, what would you technically say to goalkeepers to do in that scenario?
It's tough. I actually had this conversation recently about Marcus Hanneman very randomly, and how if the ball he didn't feel he could get there, he wouldn't move, because his thinking was if it then hit the post, he could then react off that. Whereas if he had already dived, got nowhere near it, and he's on the floor, the ball hits the post, they can score the follow-up, which I thought was quite an interesting mentality. And I guess there's a similarity here in that the chance of it hitting the bar and coming back out is very slim anyway. So in that moment, he's probably thinking it's either going over or it's going in. So he's paused just to wait to see what happens and then reacted thereafter. So I wouldn't necessarily suggest you do anything differently here. You know, I don't think he obviously can't get the ball. It's miles away from him. If he carries on running, yeah, look, in this situation, it may well help, but in other situations, maybe not. So, look, I think it's such a rare situation to be in. Yeah, I don't think you necessarily would do anything too differently. But I do find that fascinating, that idea, like I say, going back to the Marcus Hanneman one. I guess you can't always know, this is the point, is that I would always suggest that you go all out, whatever it is, because realistically, you know, those saves, sometimes the best saves you make are the ones that you don't think you're going to make it, and then all of a sudden you get a fingertip to it and it goes around the post. So to actually have the mental ability to and the prediction and the sort of geography almost to know that the ball's you're not going to be able to get the ball. I don't think you can make your mind up in a split second to do that. So, yeah, as a general rule of thumb, it's go all out. And as you say, you might just make that save that you never thought you could.
Okay, to finish the match roundup, we'll touch on the French playoffs. Mm. So the last ever, actually. So they're going to stop doing this, which is something of a shame because quite exciting. They used to do it in English football, didn't they? But stopped around the late 80s, I think, of the second from bottom team in the top division playing the second team in the second tier. So it's quite a nice little tête-à-tête. Yeah. And this was Saint-Étienne against Auxerre. Went to penalties. There was a little habit from the Saint-Étienne goalkeeper, Paul Bernardoni. I've not seen this before. A little lick of the thumb and the index before he faced a penalty.
It's kind of like a twitch. It was almost like a little nervous. Yeah, I guess we've all got those little habits. I don't think there's anything in it. I think it was just almost like you're about to turn a page of a book.
I can't stand it when people do that.
When they lick their finger.
When they lick their finger before turning the page of a dirty newspaper and then lick their finger again. And in this case, he's licking his gloves, which are also very dirty.
Yeah, which is probably worse. So, yeah, I really have no explanation as to why he was doing that. And in the end, unfortunately, he was on the losing team, wasn't he? So it didn't work, whatever it was.
Did you have a habit of sorts? I know you did your kind of crouched into a ball, right?
Yeah, but they were more, I suppose, techniques. Yeah, I've got a few kind of weird, like, twitches.
We're talking about goalkeeping here, mate.
Yeah, no, like weird things I'd do. Yeah, like weird things I'd do during games and stuff. But, you know, I used to sing to myself and whatever else. But it wasn't anything like that. Was more just, I don't know, you just do stuff during the games, don't you? Just to kind of like stay in tune with the game and connected to the game.
Quite literally in tune with the game.
In tune.
What did you sing? Can you, what sort of stuff?
Oh, it'd be anything. Whatever I listened to on the way in. Yeah, I remember... was it I Believe I Can Fly? Although I probably can't really sing R. Kelly now, which is a shame. But that was a classic one because obviously in being a goalkeeper as well, like had to believe I could fly. So, you know, I would sing that quite regularly. That was a favourite. But no, I used to find that a 90-minute game of football was quite long for a goalkeeper. So a lot of the time when you're not involved and you're having to stay focused, I'll just like hum, you know, hum along. It's to a tune.
Just random tunes.
Just random tunes. Yeah, just whatever I'd listen to, what was in my mind. And yeah, that would allow me then to just stay with the game. Then when something would happen, I'd be ready, you know?
Just this thought of you being in goal singing, I Believe I Could Fly to yourself. If any, I suppose no one could hear it really because of the crowd. Yeah.
No, no one could hear it. And then in between that, you'd then be shouting at people and then I'd start singing again, yeah. That was my look. I don't think, for all the goalies I've spoken to, I don't think anyone else sings. I think I was quite unique with that. But I think everyone has their own little quirks, I'd say.
Oh, let us know if you've got goalkeeper quirks. If you sing, indeed, let us know. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net or on our WhatsApp 07503673020. Can they match you?
Can they? Have they got as good a voice as me? That's the question.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, a few more movers and shakers this week, and they are... Trevor Carson has gone to St Mirren from Dundee United. That is undisclosed. Aaron Chapman and David Marshall from Gillingham to Stevenage and QPR to Hibernian, respectively, both on free transfers. And amongst a smattering of retained and released lists, David Martin has been released from West Ham. And Ron Hoffman, the option wasn't taken up on his contract at Sunderland.
Yeah, some interesting ones there. Obviously a shame for David Martin not to still be at West Ham. Of course, I know they've shown it several times over the last week or two, that game against Chelsea, and that'll still, I suppose, live long in the memory of West Ham fans, and certainly for him, something until the day he dies, I'm sure. You know, it's an incredible day, and that affinity he's got with the club. Good move for David Marshall. I know that's been on the cards, it feels like, for a while, but again, he had a solid end to the season, obviously cut short through injury, unfortunately, but did very well at at QPR when he went there. So no doubt he will be the number one up at Hibs and a top goalkeeper. And no doubt he'll enjoy playing in the SPL again. And similarly, Trevor Carson, you know, did very well to help Morecambe stay up last season. And we spoke about them quite a bit because really came from nowhere in order to gain survival. I watched quite a few of his games back end of the season. He had some brilliant, brilliant games. So some big shoes to fill with Jack Anik, who I know was a bit of a fan's favourite at St Mirren, but certainly if anyone can, I'm sure he can.
If anyone can.
Go on. I'm assuming this is some TV reference.
No, Trevor Carson can. I thought you were just going
to... That would have made sense. That would have had a nice ring to it.
Ron Hoffman, just quickly as well, wrote an open letter of sorts to the Sunderland fans, which was nice. And he listed five things that he would like to take to Germany with him from England.
Oh, go on.
So one, the confidence, composure and can-do mentality of the people, especially in the north. Two, humour and the ability to laugh at yourself. Mm. Yeah, it's been studying the Richard Lee rulebook of goalkeeping. Mm. Three, everyday digital life, which makes many things so much easier. Mm-hmm. Completely disagree with him on that front.
I'm with him on that.
Four, the equanimity to talk about the weather but complain little.
Okay.
And five, the food. Ha ha, he says.
Okay. Is he being sarcastic?
I think he is on the food.
But no, love that. Love that. And look, again, played a massive, massive role in what Sunderland have achieved this season. Played the lion's share of the games. So I'm sure for him, a shame that he won't be there in the Championship next. It'd be really interesting what Sunderland do, because Patterson finished in the season so positively. And again, we spoke about Aidan Stone, but you know, similar story here. So does he now get his chance as number one in the Championship, or do they bring someone in?
From a coach perspective, Christophe Lolichon has finally moved on from Chelsea. Been there a long time, since 2007. Not so much front and centre with regards to the goalkeepers. I think he's been working with the lone goalkeepers, hasn't he? Kelvin Davis and Dave Watson have both departed Southampton. And we also, not from a coach perspective, but from a goalkeeper retiring perspective, another former guest of the podcast, Lee Grant, has finally hung up his gloves. 511 career appearances.
Yeah, excellent. And I'm sure I've told this tale before, but of course, Watford, back in the day, the choice, was it going to be Lee Grant or Richard Lee? They made the right choice. So, no, I'm delighted for Grant. Incredible career, fantastic career, and had a second lease of life when he went to Stoke. Thinking back, because he was out of favour at Derby from memory, and a link with a couple of the coaches at Stoke, went in there as a number three effectively. Then it was the injury to Jack Butland, when Jack Butland was really flying back then, the injury to Jack Butland. Shea Given stepped in, wasn't quite happening for him. He was obviously in the latter stages of his career, which then out of nowhere gave Lee Grant a chance in the Premier League. And of course, was just phenomenal in the Premier League. Arguably every bit as good as Butland was the season before. And then on the back of that, of course, a season or two later, however it worked, he got his move to Man United under Mourinho, I think, wasn't it? And he's been there for several years. And the fact that David De Gea put such a nice post out about Lee Grant, I think, says it all. You know, he is that type of character. He always was, where you talk about what a number three needs to be at a top club. He epitomises it in that he's robust. You know, certainly when it comes to training, he'll be able to do everything. Still an athlete, even at the age of 39. And as a character, just that perfect bridge between staff and players, you know, can really keep an atmosphere where it needs to be. So, yeah, massive well done to him. And I know he's gone into a role now at Ipswich Town, of course, with McKenna. And the relationship there to build at Manchester United. So he's great that he's going to be staying in football, and I'm sure he'll be very successful with McKenna.
Good stuff. Okay, just a couple more bits of admin, Richard, to finish. Save of the season has taken place in the Premier League. The Castrol save of the season. You've seen the nominees.
Yep.
Weird video where you could barely see the saves. It was like they were trying to gear it towards a certain save, I have to say.
Yeah, kind of some of the ones, I think we pointed out the Leno save in particular, where it was a couple of seconds from an angle where you couldn't actually really see the save. But my guess, and you were asking, I actually don't know the winner.
Not so much your guess. No, who would you give it to?
So who would I give it to? There's some great saves, and obviously a couple from De Gea. There was the one from Pope back into the season. Jordan Pickford, that brilliant save. So I would say the Pickford one's up there because of the importance of it. And I think that is an important part of the decision-making. Look, my gut says it will have been the Aaron Ramsdale save that will have won it, which was aesthetically, I would say, the most pleasing. You know, so many pictures of that save and the athleticism shown in order to get himself up into the top corner and almost stun the ball in onto the crossbar, and somehow the follow-up didn't go in and he managed to do just enough to get it out. So I would say for that alone, I believe that has won it. Would I say that was the best save? Look, I wouldn't be too argumentative if that were. I think that it was a fantastic save. Yeah, do you know what? No, I'll go with that one. I mean, this has turned into a really long section on the pod, and I'm sure many have switched off over the last 5 minutes while I've been discussing this to myself. But yeah, I'm going to go. It was a phenomenal save. It really was, and it really put him on the map as an Arsenal goalkeeper, I think. And actually, that was, if you look back, that really did start the torrent of plaudits. You know, it really was. That was the moment. Then from then on, he had good game after good game after good game and really built up that momentum, which has ended up being a very positive season for him personally, although obviously not as positive as Arsenal would have hoped it would be as a team. So for that reason, I'm going to say that save.
So just to go back to my initial question, the save you'd give it to was Aaron Ramsdale. That's what you're saying is the number one save this season.
Yeah, although I did really like the Mendy save against Brentford. I thought that was excellent.
Okay.
Oh, this is too tough. Why have you just sprung this upon me when we're doing a podcast? That's the issue here. This has taken me 5 minutes to... Because I'm still not 100% with my decision, because I thought the Mendy save, the speed of reaction and the athleticism shown to get fingertips over the bar was phenomenal.
Well, come on, mate. If you were to sit on a Sky Sports panel on Match of the Day and they're like, right, we need an answer. You can't go around the houses. You're on a clock and someone's talking in your ear. Come on. Yeah. Give me an answer.
Ramsdale.
Okay. The winner was Jordan Pickford.
Was it really?
It was Jordan Pickford.
Which,
yes.
Okay. I'm okay with that. Because as I said straight away, the importance of that save, that, yeah. Whereas... Don't get me wrong, Aaron Ramsdale, I think it was a 1-0 victory, the Aaron Ramsdale save, so it was very important. But the fact that Everton stayed up and effectively it was a couple of excellent Jordan Pickford performances. Yeah, okay. No, I'm good with that.
Okay, good. Glad we got there in the end. The Premier League Youth Save of the Season was also awarded, wasn't it, this week? And that has gone to Leeds United goalkeeper Danny van den Heuvel. This was a game against Chelsea. Very good save.
Yeah, it was. Recovery save. Yeah, excellent save, actually. It should have been a goal. How it wasn't a goal. Well, in fact, how it wasn't a goal was because of him. And the speed at which he got back just didn't give up on it. You know, it's one. In fact, it goes back to the conversation we had earlier. And this very much epitomised it, where the ball's been played square. Basically, the guy's got a tap in and he's just turned and thrown himself into the space, trying to give himself the best chance. And thankfully for him, he's pulled off a stunning save.
And finally, now this has been... a talking point ever since it happened in 2002, the summer of 2002. What do you think I'm talking about? What iconic goalkeeping moment happened? Not particularly positively iconic goalkeeping moment for one particular very good England goalkeeper over the years.
So I'm guessing it was David Seaman.
Yes.
2002, I'm guessing, was Ronaldinho.
Correct. Okay. So over the years, many people have come out, even Ronaldinho himself, and said, yep, intended it. Rivaldo, I remember saying, yeah, he told us he meant it. Janinho said he'd practiced it on the training ground. Ronaldinho, who, believe it or not, was on his Expedia Route 10 freestyle bus tour of Paris when he decided to talk about this. Okay. Yeah, just as you do. We've all been on one, haven't we? An Expedia Route 10 freestyle bus tour of Paris. And he said, no, it was not on purpose.
Wow.
He's finally come out and said it. But, he said, we studied a lot and we knew that the English goalkeeper, he kind of put up with the advance a little bit. I was really lucky that the ball went in the way it went in for the sadness of many English people and for the happiness of so many Brazilians.
He's finally owned
it. Finally admitted it.
Oh, it was a hard... The chances. This is where I feel like we can't really talk about it too much 20 years ago, really, but it was just one of those moments where actually it happens sometimes. I still don't, and I know everyone's got different thoughts on this, but for me, it was it was perfectly placed. Of all places it could go, and even worse if it wasn't meant, of all places it could go, as a goalkeeper, you've got to take an advanced position. You want to try and come and affect the cross. He was positive in doing that, and it's an absolute freak of nature. It's just one of those things, and for it to happen in that moment, that's where sometimes football just isn't fair and doesn't make sense. I was gutted as an England fan, but then gutted for him in that moment, because I just thought, you haven't done much wrong there, really. Like, you've taken up a good position, you're ready to come and catch the cross, and then you get done by a freak goal like that, and naturally, because it's such a freak goal, all the attention is on you, and it's a deciding goal. Like, horrible, horrible moment. But look, yeah, again, it was 20 years ago. We can't really go into too much depth, can we?
Mate, wonderful stuff. Thank you for inviting me into your home. It's been nothing but a pleasure.
The default invite, you are more than welcome.
We've got a few of these, like you said, cropping up over the summer. This will be the last Between the Sticks for a few weeks, but there'll plenty. Go on.
They'll be a bit ad hoc, will they, moving forward?
They'll be a bit ad hoc moving forward, yes.
Okay.
What do you mean?
Well, like, it won't be every week, I take it, or will it still be every week?
When the season's back.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, but I mean between now and then.
Between now and then, no, ad hoc.
Ad hoc.
Yeah. Some GKs on there, well, we keep on top of those, and this gives us an opportunity as well, doesn't it, to catch up with some goalkeepers, so our feature interview pods will be returning.
They will, indeed.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers away. Oh, wow.